You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Rosalind English.
With the results of the European elections just in, we bring you the 14th edition of Professor Catherine Barnard's podcast on the legal steps to withdrawal from the European Union. Bonnie Soans asks Catherine, what was her reaction to the results?
Well, I don't think they came as a great surprise. It was well trailed that the Brexit Party would do well. I think what's really striking is just how well the combined Remain parties did, especially the Lib Dems. And what we see is acute polarisation, as John Curtis said so clearly last night. You've got the country split down the middle, you've got Parliament split down the middle, and what's worse for those who've got to navigate their way through it, deeper polarisation. People are talking about Brexit a great deal, they're thinking about it, but they are no further closer coming together.
So the Brexit Party are the winners of the night, and a triumph for Nigel Farage. UKIP, his former party, really trailing way behind with just a few percentage points.
And no seats.
And no seats. And, of course, a surge for the Liberal Democrats and the Greens, the Remain party with the new Change UK, again, in single figures lower down there in the results table. But it's the Conservatives and Labour who have hemorrhaged European voters.
That's right. Labour, because their policy of constructive ambiguity, which has got them quite a long way, that road is now closed. The voters don't know which way Labour will turn. Emily Thornberry said last night very clearly, we have not been clear, and so we need to jump one way or the other. And of course, there will be votes lost on either side. For the Conservatives, of course, it's been absolute turmoil. The Prime Minister announced a resignation the day after the vote. And of course, we're about to embark upon a leadership contest. And I think what the leaders will take away from this, the MPs and also the party members, is they'll see the surge in the Brexit Party and they'll say what we need is a hard Brexiteer who will advocate no deal. But the trouble is, the country is split. And the fact is that whoever becomes the leader of the Conservative Party has got to countenance the fact that either he or she, probably he, will tack ever further to the right and thus alienate the core of Remainers, or they try and find a compromise. But let's just assume we're heading to a no deal on the 31st of October. So we crash out. There's been quite a lot of preparation done for it on the UK side. The EU have also done quite a lot, and they've put in some provisions that will allow, for example, truck drivers to deliver goods on the basis of their existing qualifications for 9 months after we leave. But what happens at the end of that nine-month period? So there might be a brief honeymoon where no deal isn't quite as bad as people thought. But then what? No deal is not a single event, it's a process, and it's a process whereby businesses will be having to adapt quite a lot. And is it really the case that we want to have no trade deal with our closest trading partner?
People talk about going out on no deal on WTO terms, but let's wind the clock back to those three key issues of these Brexit negotiations. They are the divorce bill, citizens' rights, and the Northern Ireland backstop. Has anything changed in relation to those three issues? And would a new leader, a new Prime Minister, Conservative, would they be able to change the terms of Theresa May's withdrawal bill? So that's the divorce bill, the Northern Ireland backstop, and citizens' rights. Has anything changed?
Well, broadly, the answer to that question is no. If we leave with a no deal and we are looking for some sort of future trade agreement, it's quite clear that the EU will not begin negotiating with us without having sorted out those three big-ticket items, citizens' rights, Northern Ireland backstop, and the bill. And, of course, what does that rather look like? Well, you'll come pretty close to the withdrawal agreement. Now, I think what's interesting, it may be that with a new leader in place, we know that they say that they're going to go back to Brussels and renegotiate the withdrawal agreement, and Brussels will say no because the withdrawal agreement is done and dusted. Now, it may be that there's some more wriggle room in respect to the Northern Ireland border. but only if we've got a much firmer idea of what the future arrangements might look like. Because there is an odd thing, it's something we've talked about a lot on this podcast, there's an odd thing, isn't there, that we've always said that the withdrawal agreement's about the past, it's about settling up the terms of the divorce, and the political declaration's about the future. But in fact, the Northern Ireland backstop spans both the past and the future. Now, the EU's always been very clear, and I think this is where Theresa May did fail, that the EU led on the question of sequencing. And sequencing is that the EU said, we won't even begin to talk about the future until you've sorted out the past. That sounds very sensible, until you start to realise that it's not so easy to disentangle the past from the future, look at the Northern Ireland backstop. Now, the clever thing would be for a new Prime Minister, a fresh pair of eyes, to go in and say, actually, we need to have something a bit more concrete about the future. EU will at first take say no, because they'll say we can't negotiate a trade deal with an existing member state. But we're living in a very strange world, and it may be better for the EU to have some sort of thought about what the future will look like. But the EU will come back and say, right, OK, we might even be prepared to bend the rules, but what do you, the UK, want? And that's the stumbling block. And this is why this debate goes round and round and round. And none of those issues were articulated at all in the European Parliament elections. At one level, why should they be? Because they're about people sitting in the European Parliament. But for the UK, of course, the European Parliament elections was about Brexit, and it became some sort of proxy second referendum. And what we know is you've got half the country, not numerically, but those who voted, want hard Brexit, probably no deal. And then you've got the other half of the country who are saying, we want to stay in, or at best, we want a second referendum.
So there is some slither of hope there that the new Prime Minister, Tory party leader, whoever that may be, will think in terms of, right, Theresa May did get it wrong. We need to look at both the divorce bill and the future trading relationship together, and the sequencing as you describe it. But therein lies another problem, which might be a problem, it might not. But the European officials themselves, Juncker, Barnier, are going to change. We're going to have new leadership within Europe. Do you think that will make a difference?
It probably will. They're going to be facing a much more fractious European Parliament with very strong performance by the Greens, yes, but also look how well the far right did in the two big states, namely France and Italy. And so they cannot rely necessarily on the cooperation of the European Parliament. And then the question is, how on earth are we going to be, or how on earth are they going to be able to select the new president of the Commission? Will they still use the Spitzenkandidat process that was used last time? Or will some different mechanism be used? And remember, there's going to be some big changes: president of the Commission, also president of the European Council, also president of the European Central Bank. These are really crucial jobs. And so these people may also want to make their mark. And one way that they might want to make their mark is to say, to hell with Brexit. We've, as the EU, have devoted quite enough time to Brexit. They haven't got the same investment in Brexit that Barnier and Juncker have had, who've invested so much of their time in trying to deal with the consequences of Brexit. So new leaders might say, let's start fresh and let's just leave the UK to sink on its own.
Well, that's a thought. Finally, Catherine, the chances on the 31st of October this year, 2019, of a no-deal Brexit. They're much higher now.
I think they're much higher now. I've always thought it was about 50-50. I think it's higher because, actually, if you just look at the process, you look at the fact that it's going to be a Conservative Prime Minister who will be in office at the time, and in the light of the outcome of the European Parliament elections, you've got a sense in the Conservative Party that they need to out Farage, Nigel Farage. How can they do that? By getting another populist in. You have a populist to respond to a populist, and that means a hard Brexiteer. And, of course, the question is, how would you set about the process of trying to stop the no deal? If there's no legislation coming into Parliament, therefore there's no legislation to amend to try to stop the no deal process, to try and revoke Article 50, it would really probably need the MPs to take back control of the order book. They've done it once before, it's true, but it's very difficult to do. That depends on John Bercow. So he may be the key man of the moment going forward.
So we want to keep John Bercow in place if you are a Remainer. A Prime Minister People have talked about proroguing Parliament and the Queen getting involved too. But surely a no-deal Brexit, if the preparations are in place, and some thought that they were in place, but how prepared is the UK economy for no-deal? Have the preparations been done? And surely if a new Prime Minister did them, there wouldn't be the same objection to a no-deal Brexit.
The UK has done as much as is humanly possible to prepare for a no-deal Brexit. About 11,000 civil servants have been working on this, and I genuinely believe they've done as much as possible. But of course, what it doesn't take into account is that a lot of our commitments are reciprocal. And so, for example, take criminal justice matters, European arrest warrant. So all of these are dependent. We can say we will respond to any requests from the EU, but the EU is not able to respond to requests from us. So there are whole areas in particularly justice and home affairs matters, but also in respect of healthcare matters. Think about your EHIC card. It's operated on a reciprocal basis. So yes, we can say we can give free healthcare, emergency healthcare to a French person who gets sick in the UK, but the French won't be obliged to do anything of the sort in reverse. Now, yes, the UK have tried to enter into bilateral agreements, for example, with Spain, and that works, but it's not comprehensive across the EU 27 or indeed the EEA 30 to include Norway, Liechtenstein and Iceland. And so a lot of things that worked pretty seamlessly before will not work going forward, and that's no fault of the UK's governments. They just can't dictate that in other states. Now, a lot of Brexiteers say, oh, not to worry about all of that, that's just noise. We can do it all under WTO terms, but as we've discussed before, the WTO is not this amazing solution. If it was such an amazing solution, why would any country enter into a free trade agreement? The WTO is not the answer. And furthermore, and specifically, Article 24 of the GATT, which is what the Brexiteers refer to as the solution for the next 10 years, misses the point. Article 24 says there won't be any new customs duties or non-tariff barriers, but only if a country is working towards a free trade agreement. The whole point about a no-deal Brexit is we'll have shredded the withdrawal agreement and we will be nowhere near negotiating a free trade agreement. Article 24 is not the solution.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast and recommend us to a friend.